Ron Ananian. Hit the push button. It was a push button to start vehicle. And it went click, click, click. And you say to yourself, gee, that's a bad battery. But can you prove it?
And I'll teach you, teach you, teach you. I'll teach you the electric slide.
The Car Doctor.
You know what, Ron? This may be the first mechanical repair other than brakes, tires, etc.
Isn't that great?
Has needed.
Yeah, that's just
unbelievable.
Great. These cars are just getting better, man. They really are.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at
855-560-9900. And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, thanks for stopping by the garage today. Let's kick the garage doors wide open and get started right away. Let's go over and talk to Augie in Florida, 03 Lincoln Town Car, and see what's going on here. Augie, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir.
Yes, on the front door, driver's side, I took the panel off to fix the handle.
Okay.
And everything was working prior to then. I put it back together. The only thing that was working after that was the power windows. Not the seats, the mirrors, the trunk button. The trunk wouldn't open.
Okay.
I took it off again to check if I missed the connector, but all the connections seemed tight. Put it back, nothing. Just the power windows.
Did you disconnect the driver's door switch from the harness when you pulled the panel off, or did you just work around? Did you leave it connected?
No. I unhooked all the connectors.
Okay. Silly question, but I've seen this before. You sure you've got the connectors back on the right location on the switch itself?
I double-checked. I looked at them if I could possibly put them back in the wrong way. It looked like they're a little different on each connector.
They should be, but I've seen, with a little lack of looking, and I'm trying to think of a delicate way to say this, Augie, but, you know, with a little lack of looking and some persistence, you could actually do it wrong. I've seen it before. I'm not saying it's common. I'm not saying it's easy, but I have seen it. Short of that, I would treat it as if everything's connected properly and you verified that, then I would tell you somebody's got to go through powers and grounds. Do you have power at least start with the door locks? Do you have power to the door locks? I believe it's fuse 29 in the junction box behind the left side of the dash. You know, is the fuse good? Could you have touched something and caused the fuse failure? And
I checked that fuse.
Right.
I did pull that fuse out and checked it. And it was weird. I pulled it out. When I put it back, the light went on the door, and then it went off again.
Was the fuse blown?
No.
If you pull the fuse out again, will the light go back on and
off? Yeah, I pulled it out, it put it back in, it went on, and it shut off, but it wouldn't go on again. It was crazy.
Okay. Well, I've got to think that's telling me that you've got something wiring-wise inside the door disconnected. Something in the door is connected wrong. Now, short of that,
okay. All
right, short of that, just because what if, you always got to play what if when you're fixing cars. What if it was your turn when you opened the door, the wiring in the door pillar, you know, where the wires come out between the body and the door itself, that package of wiring there, as, you know, over time, as the door opens and closes all these years, it's 17 years old, those wires can break. And, you know, especially if you've had the door panel off, if you tugged on the harness in any way without realizing it, and, you know, did you break any of the wiring in the door pillar itself, and that's causing the circuits not to respond?
I don't believe so, because the covering on that rubber covering, that's not cracked or anything.
Well, that has nothing to do with it. I've had it, Augie. I've had it where I usually have to split that boot open. I will slice that boot neat and clean with a razor blade on an older vehicle, just because I can't get a replacement boot. And then I have a silicone waterproof tape that I will, you know, tape around the boot, and it kind of melts into the folds of the rubber and provides a permanent seal. So don't take that the boot is intact as a sign that you know, the wiring isn't broken underneath. The way I would question it is I would get a voltmeter, get a wiring diagram, go to each individual component you're trying to diagnose. Like in the case of the power door locks, I know it's a black-white wire that leads up to the switch. I would go up to that black-white. Is it hot at the switch itself? And then do you have ground at the switch? Did you lose grounds for some reason? Don't look, you know, it's nice and easy to say, hey, I want to make sure it's just one thing that caused the entire problem. And I guess that's, you know, we always hope for the best, right? But don't rule out you don't have more than one thing wrong, especially if everything was really working prior to you taking it apart. You know,
yeah, that's what's so aggravating.
Right. Well, listen, you don't know. I talked about it last hour. I had a customer this week. I haven't seen her in a while. The cooling fan on her Mustang broke, and she didn't realize it, but all summer long she didn't have low-speed cooling fan. The low-speed portion didn't work. When the high-speed came on, it sounded like an animal was trapped underneath the wheels. It was screeching so bad. So, you know, there's no rule that defines or says one problem, one vehicle at a time. I've seen multiple things happen on more than one occasion. And, you know, you've got to, you know, break that vehicle down. If you were going to take the power door lock circuit out by itself, how would you fix it? If you took it out and put it on the bench, what would you want to make sure? Power, ground, switch, actuators. Break it down on the car. You know, do you have power to the switch? Yes or no? You do? Why doesn't it work? You know, is it going to the right switch? Is it on the right pin? Do you have ground?
Right.
Okay. And then work it out from there one step at a time.
Those four connectors that go to the piece on the armrest.
Right.
They're color-coded. I don't have anything on it. I try to look it up to see what the sequence was on the colors, but I couldn't find
it. I've never seen it that way. What'll happen is what I'll do is I'll verify. I do two things. I verify that the colored wire is going to the right component. So I'll go to the door locks. I'll go to the door lock switch and pin it out. I'll look and I'll see, you know, there's typically four wires on it or five wires. You know, do I have black? Do I have the pink light green? Do I have the light green violet? Whatever the colors are. And, you know, is that what's coming to the switch? Yes, okay, then that's the switch. This is the wiring connector for the switch, and then so on, and then work my way backwards. The other way is, or the other thing to do is, sometimes, I'm not saying every time, but sometimes those connectors are notched so that you can't put them on wrong. Somehow we find a way. You know, listen, you got to remember, the average guy on the assembly line has under 2 minutes to put his component together. So it's got to be done quickly. It's got to be done efficiently as the car is moving. So, you know, bang, put the connector on, bang, put the connector on, bang, put the connector on. And they did thousands of them, and it was right. There's got to be an easy way to do it. There's got to be some kind of identification tab there. So, but look at the wire colors per switch. You're going to need a wiring diagram, which you should have anyway at this point, and take it through from there.
And then I'll do what you said, check the hotline, make sure there's juice coming through.
Right.
And so there's no broken wires in the door.
Right. And what you could do is you could put your meter on the hot leg of the door lock circuit and find the ground leg of the door lock circuit and use that for your ground. That way you're checking to see, you know, do you have power and ground at the same time? If you don't, find an alternate ground. If you still have no power, then you know it's power. If you do have power, then it's ground. And the reason I say it like that is don't assume just because you have power for a circuit, we need two things to work, right? We need a power, we need a ground side. We want to check both. And you could do it the other way around too, but I'm just saying you want to make sure that you have power and ground. Don't fall into the trap of, well, I had power, I moved on, and then find out the ground wire is broken somewhere as well. Do all those things. If you need more, Augie, I'm here. Give us a shout back at 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the car doctor, at yours and everybody else's service. I'll be back right after this.
It on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Rob.
Hey, let's get over to Rob in Tennessee, 98 Explorer. Rob, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Yes, the fuel gauge, probably about a year ago when I would, you know, fill the tank completely, it would only indicate like a 3/4 full. And then once I use a fourth of the tank, then it's, you know, accurate after that.
Right.
It's been progressively getting worse. And now it's maybe like 2/3. It indicates like 2/3 full when I fill it all the way up. But once it burns out 1/3 of the tank, then it's accurate. It seems like it's progressively getting worse.
Right, got it.
But it's accurate to the, you know, the low point there.
Right, when it gets on the other side of the scale. So this is a sliding resistance, you know, sending unit like so many. When you're, you know, at empty, it reads about 22 ohms, and when it's full, it reads 145 if we were going to do a resistance check. But what you could do is you could disconnect the fuel pump and sending unit connector. And there's going to be a yellow-white wire and a black-yellow, all right? You want to check the resistance between those two. If the tank is closer to empty, it should read down low. You know, if it's down low, it should read anywhere from 15 to 30 ohms. If the tank's filled to the brim, that reading is probably going to be over 145, closer to the 150, 160 mark. You know, so if we look at it at the high end, if you want to, you know, fill it up, because that seems to be where you're having the problem, and then go do the reading, That would make sense.
Instead of reading 160, it might read like, say, what, 110 or something.
Yeah, if you're seeing when it's full, it's reading half, let's say. You know, where is it when the tank is full? Where does it read? Half gauge.
Okay.
Little over half gauge.
Right. Yeah. Right now it's slightly over half.
Yeah. So.
But it's accurate from that point.
Right.
To empty.
My guess is it'll read 75 ohms, 75, 80 ohms when you're at that halfway point, and then it'll progressively go down and read correctly. That's common.
Well, that's common.
Yeah. Okay. It's more common for sending units and stuck floats, things like that to occur. Gauge clusters themselves, I mean, it happens, not as common. I would start with testing the sending unit, and then if you're lucky enough or you can find a potentiometer on eBay and you want to buy a potentiometer, set it to 22 ohms, hook it up to the circuit, gauge should read zero. Set it to 145, gauge should read full. Set it to 80 ohms, it should read somewhere in the middle. If you can prove that, the wiring's good, the circuit's good, your problem's not at that end. Now you got to go the other way and lower the tank, because we don't drop tanks. Well, you lower the tank. And,
there's no access from the inside. It has, have to remove the tank to get to it.
Yeah, there is if you want to get a hole saw and cut a hole through the floor. But, you know, I don't think so. And as I say to Danny all the time in the shop, we don't drop anything. We lower things. And I'm willing to bet 20 years old, it's probably got a fair amount of miles on it. You might as well just do a pump.
150.
Yeah, you might as well do a pump and a sending unit all together and get it over with, because it's the pain of lowering the tank is going to be too much that at least this way when you're done, you're done. And you can
I'll check the resistance before I test it before I drop it.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and if you're looking for a decent part, make sure go out to O'ReillyAuto.com. I'm sure you've got an O'Reilly Auto Parts near you. See what they've got and, get yourself something from them, because then they're a good source for technical information. And, make sure you get a fuel filter while you're down there, too. You know, we always want to do filters and pumps together, even though this starts out as a sending unit, if that's what it is, you know, kind of a problem.
Does it have like a sock filter in it?
It will have a sock on the end of the pickup tube.
Okay.
But 98 should still have a filter that's in this most god-awful, horrible place. So while you've got everything apart, you might as well do it once and get it over with. And, it's just time. It's time.
I know it has a filter along the frame rail, but does it have another one inside the tank also?
Yes, and that'll be on a that's why you want to buy the whole pump and sender together, because everything will be together as an assembly.
Oh, okay.
You know, it'll just be all one piece. Take it out, put it in. Just make sure the fuel pump, and it should, comes with a new rubber O-ring or a new gasket for the top for the lock plate. And then when you take the tank down, before you open it up and take the pump out, and you may want to do this beforehand or just have it on hand just in case, you know, you're going to take an air gun and blow the crud away from the lock ring before you, you know, take the pump out. You may need a new lock ring. You know, if this was New Jersey, I'll talk about it like it's New Jersey. If it's New Jersey, brother, the lock ring corroded, and it's going to crumble when we go to take it apart, so we're going to put a new lock ring in it too. You know,
this one's been in the South and in a garage.
Yeah, Tennessee's a different world. You know, yeah. I'll tell you what, you get out of the Rust Belt states. I'll never forget. You know, I've got a '72 Monte Carlo that spent its life in Texas, and you know, I'm still kind of tinkering with it. And it was a running car, but I just like to tinker. And you know, before I put it out on the road, and you know, when I tell you we took the exhaust off, walked up to the exhaust manifold nuts and bolts where the head pipes met the manifolds. Took the nuts off like it was just rolled off the truck. It was unbelievable. Absolutely crazy. Yeah, you know,
they age well out west.
Yeah, they really do. It's a pain to get them here, and it cost me a few bucks. But in the long run, the lack of rust on this vehicle is staggering. You know, to the point that the brake lines were still silver, the nuts were anodized gold, everything looked like it just came out of the showroom 50 years ago. And it's just amazing how we buy these cars up here in the Rust Belts, and we just subject them to the winters that we subject them to. It's just horrible, just horrible.
Yeah, so. Just don't drive it in the winter.
Yeah, well, the Monte Carlo won't be, but it might be. I kind of if it's going to be what I think it is, just a nice cruiser, I'll just enjoy it for that. So, but that's how I would attack your Explorer problem. All right, sir.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. You stay safe. Let's do some testing before we just start replacing parts and, you know, just attack it like that. Speaking of attacking things and speaking of just doing some things that make sense and, you know, common sense, just some quick brake tips. I want to get this out there. The folks over at GoodyearBrakes.com have come up with a 10 tips for a successful brake job. And I like what they say here because they talk about things from a basic perspective. And I'd be willing to bet that this press release is up on their website, GoodyearBrakes.com. And, you know, the first thing they talk about is, get the right parts from the start. When you're buying brakes, and if you're going to GoodyearBrakes.com to buy your brakes, all you have to do is enter in the vehicle's VIN, the serial number, or your license number to see what brake parts, you know, match and meet your vehicle. So that's kind of a handy feature up there at GoodyearBrakes.com. You know, obviously it's important to be safe. You know, I can't stand these YouTube videos I see of people with they're doing brake repair and the car is up on a log, a milk crate, and you know maybe you know half a garbage can, and that's their idea of a jack stand. Let's be safe. We've got this mass sitting above us, all right. And I say that sort of tongue in cheek, but I've seen some pretty stupid things on YouTube. Lubrication when you're changing brakes, all right. This is tip number three from the folks at Goodyear Brakes. You know when you're changing brakes, the slides have to be lubricated. The guide pins have to be lubricated. The caliper bolts have to be lubricated because the brake pads have to move. Now, and this is a mind blower. This one will really get you. You won't see lubrication on brake pads from the vehicle manufacturers brand new. Do you know why they don't lubricate brakes from a new car, on a new car? You don't? Come back and the car doctor is going to tell you why. When I give you the answer, it's just mind-boggling. But the answer when the car doctor returns, 855-560-9900. Don't go away. I'm back right after this. At 855-560-9900. So if you stayed with us during the break, I can give you the answer. So why do new cars not have lubrication on brake pads, slides, caliper pins, and guides? The answer is simple. Brake grease or silicone grease gives off an aromatic, and the manufacturers have problems, or so they claim, that the paint will be affected by the aromatics. And you'll actually see some car companies, if they do grease brake components, they'll paint the body separately and then marry the two halves together, the chassis and the body on separate assembly lines, bringing them together later on after the assemblies have been made together. But that's why you generally don't see lubrication on brake components. And, you know, don't take it as a sign that if it doesn't have it, it doesn't need it. It just means that that manufacturer didn't do it. Lubricating brake slides and pins, the contact areas where the pads sit so they move, is very, very important. Let's get on over and talk to Rick in Vermont, 88 Chevy Silverado. And that looks like an oopsie. Rick, this looks like an oopsie, sir. Explain to me what happened.
Well, bought the truck from an old boy and worked great. One set of keys. It's a yard truck. It's not, you know, I'm not going out plowing everybody.
Right.
And because of what's going on with me, it was going to be a project. And I have no keys.
Oops.
And I'm not sure what happened. I'm a creature of habit. I put keys in a certain place and stuff. Well, guess what? No. And a few people look, you know, at the truck. I think maybe by mistake somebody took the keys. So I have a brand new lawn ornament that my wife will kill me if it stays there any longer.
Mm.
And
just out of curiosity, have you looked under the bumper and the frame rails? Just did anybody put a hide a key somewhere, just as a suggestion?
Oh, God. You've been all through that stupid thing, the yard. You know, if it's here, I missed it.
Okay.
But anyway.
So let's assume there is no spare key on the vehicle, but you know I'm obligated to mention it, right? So
I already know.
Okay. So you've got a couple of choices. You're either going to have to pull the steering column, because this probably had two keys. This should have had a square cut key, a square head key for the ignition, and a round head key for the door. Does that sound right?
Correct.
Yeah. So,
correct.
You know, and that eliminates the doors are easy. You've just got to get a door panel off, take the lock cylinder to a locksmith. He could take it apart and coat it and see what the, you know, what the tumblers are, and then probably cut a key, and that'll work. The problem is he's cutting a key from worn tumblers. It's an 88. You know, how crisp and clean is everything? And the same could be said. You could do the same thing with the ignition lock cylinder. You'd have to, you know, get a steering wheel puller, get a lock depressor for the tilt, and, you know, depress it and pull the ignition lock cylinder out. Of course, at that point, you could just put a new lock cylinder in, which might not be the worst way to go. You know, that at least solves the ignition problem. You just won't have a key for the door. The only way you're going to get the key for the door is to do what I said, pull a lock cylinder. I would probably take the passenger side if it has not all the trucks this generation had a lock cylinder in the passenger side, but I would use the passenger side lock because it's had the least amount of wear, right? Most more people go in and out the driver's door than the passenger door, or if the tailgate locks, you know, use that lock because they're probably all going to be keyed the same. The insanely easiest way, if they can do it, is the truck titled in your name? Is it registered in your name?
Oh my God, no! It's a yard truck. It's not going to go on the road.
Right, but whose name is the truck in? Is there a registration?
Oh, I never registered it. No.
Okay. Do you have a title that says it's yours? Do you have something that says this vehicle, this VIN is yours? Do you have a bill of sale?
Yes.
Okay. Because you're going to have to take that bill of sale to the dealer with the serial number, all right? And they might be able to take the serial number, copy it backwards, and find the key codes in the file and cut keys from that.
Well, what happened, I did that.
Okay. And they couldn't do it.
Yeah, they said the truck was too old.
Right.
Could not come up with the codes.
And that's
they
possible.
They had the keys for it.
Right.
Oh, and they were all great, I have to admit. A couple of people were so fantastic, you know, looking things up for me. It was awesome. But they all came back with the same thing.
Yeah.
One dealer up in St. Albans, Vermont, said, well, the key, if I have to buy the key, that means I have to buy 50 of them. Well, I have four dealers telling me, and there's one dealer who actually has the key, but we need the code.
Right.
Is there a backwards way to find them?
Not that I'm aware of, brother. You know, the only backwards way as far as getting the door keys would be if you took the lock cylinder and they can take the lock cylinder apart, but there's a good chance that taking the lock cylinder apart means that you now have to put a replacement lock cylinder in, which could be coded the same so that all three or all two, you know, both door locks are the same. You know, if there's only one, how many door locks are in this truck? Is there a door lock on each side, passenger side, driver side?
Correct.
There's a key lock cylinder in each door. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Then you've got to get it coded the same, because getting one to have and one to not gets to be a pain in the butt. But yeah, you could take the lock cylinder apart, but that would only get you the coding for the door lock. That won't get you the ignition. To get the ignition, you're either pulling the lock cylinder, you're either going to pull the lock cylinder and, you know, possibly have the dealer take it apart, or a locksmith. I'd probably use a locksmith if you could find one. Have the locksmith take it apart and look at the tumblers and see if they can match a key from that. Or you're going to just purchase a new rotating lock cylinder, put it in, and you're done. 88 should not have had a chipped key. I believe it's just a straight-up key, so it's cheap enough. It's just a matter of, you may have an anti-theft relearn to do, depending upon what generation 88 Silverado this is. But that's the only way you're going to do it. If the dealer can't do it through VIN, then the key codes are just too old. The vehicle's too old, and there's just no other way to do it. How is it, 88, 98, 2000? Anyway, 30 years old? 30. We're 32 years old here. So I guess they're not obligated where they have to keep it. So those are the things you got to go through, Rick. I wish I had a better answer for you, but that's the only way I know of to do it. You know, those three steps. So good luck to you. I hope it works out. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. Can you help me diagnose this car? Well, let's play the game, all right? And I heard this story this week, and I thought of all of you and how much you would enjoy hearing it. So raise your hand when you know the answer. I was talking to a friend of mine in his repair shop, and he's telling me about this 2003 Chevy S10 pickup truck that came in from a customer that had a complaint of stalling, a check engine light on, high fuel trims, and a problem that the brakes weren't working as good as they used to. And that's all he got told, and that's all I got told. They went through some diagnosis. They saw high fuel trims. They fed it some propane. They saw the fuel trims come down. They went through and they looked for some of the obvious faults, vacuum leaks. They couldn't find any. And after what they thought was eliminating everything that they had eliminated, they said it must be an intake manifold leak. And they had just finished up the intake manifold, and I happened to call him about something else, and he's telling me this story. And I asked him, I said, you know, when you were looking for the vacuum leak, and I hate to be a backseat driver, when you were looking for the vacuum leak, did you happen to pull the brake line off the booster, you know, the vacuum line off the booster? And he said, yeah. I said, did it make a difference in fuel trim? And he said, no. I said, okay. I said, did you happen to leave the booster line hooked up and then push on the brake pedal and see if it made a difference in fuel trim? And he said, no, I didn't think of that. I said, okay. So I called him back, you know, the day after that. We had to talk about something else, and turns out they were still working on the S10. The intake manifold didn't repair it, and they were now looking at fuel filter and considering maybe some oxygen sensor faults as to why this truck ran so lean. And, you know, I asked him, I said, you know, talk to me about the brakes. You know, what's the brake problem? And he says, oh, it's really weird. He said, you're driving along and you'll get to a stop sign and everything's working really good. And then all of a sudden the brake pedal gets real hard and, you know, the truck barely stops. You feel like you want to drag your foot. And then it just about stalls and coughs and wheezes as I'm stepping on the brake. It's like the idle is too low, but I can't raise the idle. Do you see it? Whose hand is up? Mine was. I saw what was going on here. I said, did you happen to take the truck for a ride with a scan tool? Did you look at fuel trim? And, you know, anytime I'm hunting and doing any kind of diagnostics like this, I'll take the cheapest scan tool I've got, and I'll look at, you know, three or four different pieces of information, three or four pits. I don't want to look at the whole list of 50 or 400. I want something quick. I want to look at long-term fuel trim, short-term fuel trim, both banks. I want to look at calculated load. I want to look at coolant temp. And I want to look at engine RPM, maybe runtime, but no more than six or seven. No, nobody's taken it for a road test because they've road tested it, but, you know, nobody's done it with the scan tool hooked up because they know it stalls. They can see it stalls, and it doesn't set any fault codes. Huh. I said, you ever consider the possibility that you've got a bad brake booster? And he said, yeah, but the brakes are good most of the time. He says, every once in a while, the pedal gets hard. He said, but we can't find any fault there either because, you know, we've taken the brakes all apart. We've replaced some of the brakes. We've tested and checked everything. I said, did you ever think you have a bad brake booster? I said, and maybe that's the fault of everything. That's the fault of it all. And he said, what makes you say that? And I said, think about it. I said, you're getting an intermittent hard brake pedal. You're getting high fuel trim. It sounds like it stalls when you step on the brake. I bet your fuel trim's going to be higher when you step on the brake because it's more of a lean condition and you're creating a bigger vacuum leak stepping on the brake. You're spreading tearing or pulling on the rubber, making the hole bigger, making the leak bigger. I said, it sure seems to me like you've got a bad brake booster. They put a brake booster in it. I forget what test he ran. I don't think he did anything. I'm not really sure if I got the right answer at this point because he was kind of getting annoyed with me. And he did call me back the next day about something. I said, hey, how's the S10? He goes, oh, it's all picked up and paid for. What was wrong with it? Oh, it needed a bunch of work. And yeah, we think you were right. You know, maybe the brake problem was related to the stall too, because we put a brake booster in it and the truck's now fixed. And the point becomes that sometimes diagnosis is multi-layered. And as I started the show telling you about cars that had three problems, one vehicle, now I'm telling you three conditions to be created by one fault. The bad brake booster, the diaphragm was porous. The rubber was leaking, causing a vacuum leak worse under load, making the vehicle stall and sometimes coming close to but not quite stalling. But fuel trims were high because at one point he finally drove it, and that's what led him to the booster. Fuel trims were higher when he stepped on the brake because of the vacuum leak that was created by stepping on the brake and the rubber diaphragm that was failing on the 17-18-year-old Chevy S10. So don't rule out diagnosis and just go all the way. You got to be like Columbo. It's like being a detective. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the end of the Car Doctor. No more calls this hour. But keep in mind, 855-560-9900 is a 24/7 phone number. You can call the aforementioned phone number, 855-560-9900, and leave a message. There's a messaging service attached to it. You don't have to be, the show doesn't have to be on in order for it to use the phone number. And Tom Ray, executive producer, will call you back and put you in queue for the next live broadcast. We begin I'm giving you more to do.
I know.
Yeah. Well, you need more to do.
No, I don't. I have to work with you on Saturday. That's plenty.
Well, that's the good part. So that's why they call it Since good you. And plenty. I'm like candy. I'm so sweet.
Oh, my God.
You know what I wanted to tell everybody about, Tom? Danny's finishing up his...
My dog, Ted?
Well, Danny's finishing up his Z28, and Danny's got a 78 Z28, and it's kind of funny, right? Like, we're going through the valve adjustment on a small block Chevy, and this is something I probably haven't done. Geez, the last time I did hydraulic lifters on a cast iron small block was probably 15 years ago. And there used to be a little clip that you would sit on the end of the rocker arm that would deflect the oil so it wouldn't slosh over the side when you were adjusting the valves. And, you know, I can't find those clips. I know I've got them somewhere, but between the house and the shop and multiple hot rods and not using them in the better part of at least 15 years, maybe longer, you know, they're somewhere. And I'm trying to explain to Danny what they are because he's never seen them. He's that younger generation. They don't know from adjusting valves on small block Chevys. It's not what they were brought up on. And I started thinking about how technology is just sort of sliding by, you know, and the things that the older mechanics don't do anymore and the tools they used to use that were their bread and butter that now sit aside collecting dust and just, you know, waiting for a chance to be used, but likely won't because all that technology is gone in place of the new technology, in place of the next newer technology. You wonder what that next newer technology is going to be. I'm Ron Anani and the Car Doctor reminding you this time till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.